Hello and welcome back to the Youth Trends podcast from Vox Burner. This episode is the first in a mini-series that we're sharing with you ahead of Season 2, which will launch early next year. Today we're bringing you an exclusive listen to a panel discussion that took place at Youth Marketing Strategy New York this October on the subject of brands reinventing themselves for Gen Z. The panel was led by Alison Gough from Stylus and featured Rob Sorrell from Disney Music Group, Ben R. Russell from AC Hotels, Amber Finley from Converse, and Nicole Lachere from Varsity Spirit. Over to you, Alison.
Good morning, everybody. I promise I won't make you do any warm-up exercises for this panel, but I do promise some fantastic speakers who are here to discuss how traditional brands are reinventing themselves to become relevant and better connect with those pesky Gen Z or Gen Z kids, depending on where you're from. And like I say kids, but as you all know, they're entering the workforce and they're also becoming the future consumers, which is good news for everybody in this room and on this panel. So this is really about the now and also anticipating future needs. We'll dive into the value of being a familiar, trustworthy brand in this fast-moving marketplace, and also how panelists have adapted their brand's offering to better resonate with this new digital first generation. So I'm going to sit down, introduce the panel, and then we'll jump into some questions. To my left, we have Rob Sorrell, who is about to, or maybe you have, celebrated your 20 years at Walt Disney Company.
This month, 20 years with the Disney Music Group.
Oh, well, that's got to be worth a round of applause. Yay!
And I'm only 38. It's amazing.
Yes, a child star in the Disney world. Yes. So his team has been behind the success of Frozen, Beauty and the Beast, which is my favorite, which might age me, Guardians of the Galaxy, Star Wars, and more. And we have Benoit Russell. I had to write that phonetically. And he is a senior director at AC Hotels by Marriott and is leading the effort in the guest experience for 120 hotels worldwide. And then we have senior director global brand at Converse, Amber Finlay, on the far left. And she puts her obsession with fashion and youth culture to everyday use by developing creative content infused with the daring, youthful spirit of Converse. And onto more youthful spirit, we have Nicole Lachere, who oversees marketing and branding for Varsity Spirit, making it the worldwide leader in cheerleading and dance team camps. And it's as relevant to girls today as it was in the 1970s when it was first conceived. So I think we're about to hear more on that. So we'll start big with the idea of how an established brand can remain relevant to young people. So Nicole, we know that young people today have so much choice when it comes to their leisure time. You know, there's almost information overload out there. How do you remain relevant and get those teens and kids excited about cheerleading?
Yeah, so you know, one thing that we do is we really focus on, you know, the passion that there is with cheerleading. And a lot of our marketing and branding and almost across the organization, we were cheerleaders. So we all speak that same language. We create camps and competitions and apparel by cheerleaders for cheerleaders. So we're very focused on speaking with them where they are, where they're conversing with each other and giving them the tools and guidance to really help them be the very best at an activity that they're really, really passionate about and a really important part of their life.
Okay, and can you speak to some of the more sort of innovative strategies that you're using? Like, so you're saying that you're going where they are. Where are they, apart from on the field?
So most people know us by the cheerleading competitions on ESPN. Has anyone ever seen any of those late at night? So we've been on ESPN for 35 years, but then in the last 5 or 6 years, we have created an online video on demand subscription channel with hours and hours of cheerleading content. So we've really shifted the focus to a subscription-based video platform where they can consume as much content about cheerleading as possible. And we focus on making it look really fun and really touting the benefits of what it means to be a cheerleader and what kind of impact you have on your school. And so, you know, we know that it's that they consume video like crazy, and so we really focused on that as a way to communicate that message and still stay really relevant and timeless.
Okay, and you mentioned when we spoke earlier about one of the initiatives you have, a tumble battle, which I looked online, and if anyone hasn't seen this, I would encourage it because you can really go into a hole of cheerleading tumbles and what that all means. So it would be great to hear more about what that is, because that seems like you're covering lots of touch points with Gen Z.
So we have, this year we created a campaign called Battle in the Arena. And because we have the benefit of having some of the most prestigious events in cheerleading, we created an event where we invited cheerleaders to submit user-generated content of their best tumbling pass. And then we hosted the competition at that event, and then we streamed it live on Varsity TV. And then the winners were chosen to be part of the developmental team to co-create the next generation of Varsity shoes. So we leveraged one of our strengths in our events to talk about and promote our newest shoe.
That's great. So they're becoming they're just a focus group, basically, for having the best shoes out there.
Absolutely.
And I think that leads nicely into what Converse is doing a lot with the idea of co-creation, which I think is probably spoken about a lot here in Gen Z, and how that's a very important factor. And perhaps you can tell us more about Converse's efforts for that.
Absolutely.
And also some of the initiatives that you're doing.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think when we were hearing about American Eagle earlier about creating with your consumer, that's very much what we aim to do. Our consumers have always been pretty youthful. If you look kind of back through culture, we've always been, you know, with kids that were developing punk or skateboarding. And for us today to create with our consumer feels really natural. So we have a lot of product co-creation. Tyler, the creator, is one of our biggest partners. We've had a lot of releases with him, and we kind of orchestrate those around moments that are important to him and his fans to be part of those moments and kind of make them better. We have other co-creator partners like J.W. Anderson, I'm wearing sneakers now, Comme des Garçons, a lot of fashion partnerships. And then we have kids who we create with, where we're making custom creations with them. We're giving them the tools to create the products they want. Because what we're seeing is that it's not just the product, it's sort of how personal it is. And you see kids really wanting things to be not just customized, but feel personal, both in the way that they got them and in how they look. What are the elements that are special to them? We just did an activation in New York a few weeks ago with Chinatown Market, which is kind of this band of kids that's sort of basketball influenced that just makes their own t-shirts and products. I think we first found out about them when they like basically stamped a Nike swoosh on one of our sneakers, and people wanted it everywhere. I think LeBron wore it. But working with them to create a two-day workshop where kids could come in and stamp their sneakers with whatever it was that they wanted, I think us taking that as like our main tack with like how do we create with our consumers to make sure that everything we make is special to them in some way is kind of where we're at.
And like the Chinatown collaboration, where do you find out where your customers are? Like, how do you know that will resonate? Like, where are you looking?
I don't think there are any shortcuts to knowing, understanding kids and understanding what youth culture is all about. I feel like people are like, they want a report or they want some kind of algorithm to tell you what is good and what's not. And I've found that you just kind of have to go deep and live through the culture with them. So like create a fake Instagram, follow everyone you can find, then follow their friends. And I think living it every day really helps you understand not just what they're doing, but like why they're doing it and the underlying themes. And some other things I really like to read. Taylor Lorenz is a tech writer for The Atlantic. She's phenomenal in kind of uncovering these pockets of teen internet that I don't know, you just don't hear about anywhere else. So I think that's great to read her. And then there are a few, we work with a bunch of real kids. I think like American Eagle, we mostly work with real people, not models. And we have a few networks. Adolescent Content is one of them. They're basically like a creative collective that exists on Instagram, just a bunch of kids that make content. Just kind of talking to them and making sure we stay tight with the teens that are curating like amongst their peers.
That's interesting because it does support a lot of what Michael was saying earlier from American Eagle.
Yeah,
so we all have to create a fake Instagram and make some teenage friends.
Basically, don't scare them away with your real
one. Not
really
at all. It's all in the name of better shoes. So you can move relatively quickly, but Benoit, you are in an industry and you're in, you know, looking after 120 properties, which are planned years in advance. How do you adapt to the changing future travel consumer, you know, balancing work, play, socializing?
And actually, it's true. When you are looking at an hotel, usually the investment from an owner perspective, it's anything from $30, $40 million up to $500 million. And usually it's an asset that will be here for 20, sometimes 30 years. So when you plan, you better make sure that you plan for the future, which is something very important. And we know that trends are going very, very fast. So, you know, the notion of timeless, to jump on what we were saying earlier, it's something we are always looking at. That the hotel industry is getting less and less a chaser of trends. Not that it's becoming boring, but we know also that timeless could be something very, very exciting. And we learned that consumers are using our hotels in a different way. Remember a couple of years ago, it was all about bedrooms, where nowadays bedrooms tend to become simplified, and we are focusing a lot on public space, where we make this very fluid public space where actually people can work, live, eat, socialize, meet, all happening to the same space. And we learn a lot of new things. You know, a couple of things that I heard recently that people are no more ready to pay for something they don't use or they don't even want. That's clear. I was in a panel a couple of weeks ago where a lady told me it's an insult to me when you ask me to pay for something I don't even use. So, you know, concierge, why do you need a concierge nowadays when you can call a car by yourself or have your friend's recommendation on where to go and have dinner? We start also to realize that people want to be more and more in control. And that's applied to a lot of generation and Gen Zs even more than that, where how they make sure they can control their experience and whenever they want it, which leads to something very interesting, but you know, 24 hours a day, where the time you used to go to an hotel to have breakfast and lunch or meeting and sleeping, it's over. And that's put us challenges to us, where you can order, you know, at 2 o'clock in the morning, some food from Uber Eats or wherever you want. How the hotel industry is reacting to that, that's something that's, you know, that's a strange for us. We realize also that people want to have more and more diversity and they want to be more and more unique. So the time of standardization is over. It is all personalization and how we make sure that every single consumer is recognized for who or who she is. One thing also we see is about the notion of efficiency. You know, you can get an Uber in 2 minutes. Why do you have to wait 20 minutes to make a check-in or 30 minutes to get a pillow? That's, we know our new travelers are not willing to wait for that anymore. And last big things that we realize in the hotel industry is how we go further into experiences. I was recently on a panel where I learned that actually kids coming out of college nowadays have 40% less empathy skills than before. So it means that we know these people, they are not the best one to communicate. And how we, as hotel industry, we take them out of their home. It's something that maybe get scared. How we create experiences to make sure that those people talk to us, we talk to them, and they communicate themselves. So moving from digital to real life is something that we dedicate a lot of time.
Oh, that's interesting. And the kind of undercurrent of a lot of these initiatives and with American Eagle is the idea that it sounds obvious, but it is being driven by consumers. You know, you're not dictating how they live their life. They're actually shaping how your business is evolving. And that brings me onto the music industry. I know we had a chat before, but I think it's fascinating what you're saying about how that's evolving to meet the needs of how consumers or younger consumers are demanding how they want to listen to their music.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, first off, the music industry is led by Gen Z, whatever evolution of that young teen audience. We know that between the ages of 12 and 14, that's when kids are really shaping kind of their music persona. And it's very different today. There was a lot of talk yesterday about diversity. And we're seeing Gen Z's diversity in their music choices. So me, by the way, a proud Gen Xer that nobody ever talks about in these conferences. But when I grew
up... having a crisis. That's what we say on Stylus.
Yes. When I grew up as a kid of the late 70s, early 80s, and rock music, like that was my identity. I was formed around that. And I would never be caught dead listening to country or pop or something else. But today's Gen Z, they listen to everything, and they're about songs. They're less about artists and albums. I mean, there's a few of the big ones that they still care about, the album, but really it's about hit songs. And so it's very common that a kid is going to be listening to a pop song, into a big Luke Bryan country song, into an EDM dance song, into a hip-hop song, into Drake. They're all over the place. And because of that, we as record labels are adapting, and what's really driving our industry right now, you know, we went through 15 years of digital disruption that we've finally gotten through, and there's a giant light at the end of the tunnel called streaming, and it's amazing. And the revenue is coming in faster than we ever thought now. And so what's called playlisting, which I'm sure most of you are well aware of, but not everybody, is really big business now. So, you know, ecosystems like Spotify, they have their own playlists that they curate, like Rap Caviar and Today's Hits and New Music Friday. And this is the way that Gen Z is engaging in music. Rather than specifically always programming and looking for one artist or one album, they want to tune in and they want to hear something that's going to sound like this in this genre, be that hip-hop, be that pop, which spans a bunch of genres. And these playlists are becoming big brands. In fact, you know, growing up, most of us think of like radio stations. You'll see billboards, Kiss FM, Rock 106, and they'll show a couple artists of what they stand for. What I'm predicting is going to happen, because we're on the forefront, we're doing it ourselves, is I'm about to launch a major multi-million dollar advertising campaign that's going to advertise Disney hits. So we have a playlist called Disney Hits. It's about 65 songs, about 2.5 hours. That we curate every week. We literally, as record labels, hire data scientists now that go in and watch every skip rate on every song, and each week we go in and tweak it a little bit. And that one playlist that we have has over 2.5 million followers. This is a playlist that we create and we run ourselves. But that one playlist, and we have hundreds of playlists approaching thousands across all the ecosystems, is generating multi-million dollars in revenue for us right now. And so for us, it's about reminding consumers across the world, hey, if I'm in the mood for family music, you know what you're going to get with Disney Hits. You know, rather than having to go in and choose specifically something, I can go to this playlist and it's going to give me the latest and the greatest. And voice-activated devices are really driving the fruition of this streaming now, because we all have 2, 3, 5 of these in our house now, and even a 3-year-old can walk up and go, Alexa, play Disney Hits, or Alexa, play Frozen. So that's really the biggest thing happening in the music industry. One other trend I'll talk about for Gen Z is vinyl. It came up briefly yesterday. In fact, somebody coined the term of nostalgia, which is genius. I'll be plagiarizing that in all my presentations now. But this idea of what's old is new, and you know, latest research just came in, the first half of 2018, the physical music market, CDs, dropped 42% just in the first half of this year. So the writing's on the wall, and we've known this forever. You can't get a CD into your computer these days. You can't put a CD into your car. Target and Walmart, the music section's about this wide now. Another year, they'll be out of the business. So vinyl is really interesting. The mass consumption, we sort of look at it as a funnel, where up here, kids are streaming and listening and engaging and learning and discovering. But when they become a super fan, they want something special. They want something tangible. They want that badge of honor that they can show off to their friends, that I love this artist or I love this soundtrack. And so it's become big business. While everything else physically was going down, vinyl was up 19% year over year. This started in 2010. And for those of us in the music industry who have grown up with it, I thought this was crazy. I thought this was insane. And suddenly Urban Outfitters is the biggest vinyl record retailer for us. And it's gotten bigger every year. Is it going to surpass streaming? No, but it's still a viable, physical, tangible, collectible, and it's awesome and kids love it.
Great. Well, I'll have to go and steal all my mom's records then. And
that's right. Don't throw those out. Don't sell them.
I'm going to sell them to gullible Gen Z people. Okay. Well, what you were saying about it being a badge of honor was really interesting, and having that kind of maybe collector feel or something like a sneaker drop, or have that, you know, real specialist knowledge. One of the things that I know that we spoke about before was the idea of adapting to the way Gen Z want to buy, you know, rather than perhaps seasonality and moving at the speed of culture. We'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of similar to the idea of wanting to have like a record and the experience of the packaging and just everything that surrounds music right now. It's sort of like the song is the center of it, but like everything else almost gets more play in terms of how people share it. And I think for us, it's the same as, you know, when we create a product and when we intend to release it, like stacking up with a moment in culture that we know we can enhance and kind of have all of these ways to make that experience better for the kid. Like I said before, we work with Tyler, the creator. We have a bunch of things lined up for his festival, Camp Flognaw, which is in a few weeks actually. And we have ways to bring product to the table, bring experiences and content that make that experience better for the people that are there, and also let kids that can't be there kind of tap into it and be able to have access to it. And I think just our industry adapting to, like, I mean, there's all industry cycles. Like, everyone has kind of their own calendar, which is pretty much dictated by, you know, how you make products, how you go to market. And we're seeing that really reverse, because kids now are looking to buy from each other more than buying from big brands. You have apps like Depop and Grailed, and, you know, they're not all reseller venues, but they're places where kids buy and trade from each other. Like, you'll notice they say, like, no trades. So they've really kind of started to build up their own, like, economic systems and define how they want to buy. And for us, we see that the experience of buying and everything that comes along with it is just as important as the thing that they're buying. So for us to start to arrange the way that we think about going to market with product around moments in culture, like, okay, this is All-Star Weekend for NBA, or this is Coachella, or this is all of these moments that are important to our kids, just figuring out how we can make sure we're planning around those initiatives and bringing the product that kind of enhances that experience and helps them kind of like be themselves in that moment is really how we're starting to think about it, versus saying, okay, now this is for the spring season, we're going to release it in March, and just kind of going along a traditional retail cycle, because increasingly that's just not how they're buying.
And beyond the sort of reselling apps like Depop and so on, how does mobile play into that to make people, maybe the drop culture, and how
absolutely
does it play into that?
I mean, most of our sales are via mobile from the Converse.com site. It's not surprising. I can't remember the last time I didn't buy something with my phone. But just acknowledging that ease of transaction can basically like make or break you, kind of that like one thumbprint buying, making sure that the experience feels, they're all brand touches, so making sure that your persona kind of comes through and it's creating a good experience for them is key. But I think also making sure that it changes for me, like we oversee all the creative, it changes how you even photograph things, like considering like where you're going to show up, considering like where a tight shot's going to work versus something that's pulled out. I think one of the challenges we run into, because we're footwear, is a lot of the user-generated content is kind of like these full body shots, it's kind of like far away, and that stuff is hard for footwear. So a lot of what we do is think about how do we optimize for that mobile purchase kind of cycle that they're going to go through, and show things that are styled and then progressively like closer in on the product, knowing that all, and basically like all transactions are going to take place on a phone.
Great. And for hotels, you mentioned before, and I've read about also like the idea of sort of moving at the speed of culture and how you can understand that, you know, what people are doing on their mobiles, where they're buying, you know, resale culture. I know you have your MLife initiative at Marriott, if you can speak to
that
a little bit.
So AC Hotel is this new brand where we are targeting the next generation of travelers, but we are part of a large organization, Marriott Hotels. Just to give you an idea, 6,700 hotels in the world, and we are opening a new hotel every 16 hours in the world. So up to 1 million people sleeping by nights in our hotels, 365 days a week, so a year. Pretty heavy conversation. So we have these MLife centers all around the world, where basically our command center to see what's happening on social media and digital. So 24 hours a day, we monitor, and we are really listening what's happening, what are the trends, what are the conversations. You know, InstaFred is something we are looking at a lot right now and see what's happening. But it's also a very nice way for us to always looking at where and how we can engage our brands in a meaningful way into this conversation. So it's a thing we do. And then it's an amazing tool to engage one-to-one with consumer. So when we have guests staying in our hotels and sharing about experience or sharing with a specific moment, how we can react to them, how we can encourage them, how we can provide answers, how we can integrate them to a larger community 24 hours a day all over the world with all the culture around that. So it's something absolutely fascinating where we're really, really listening a lot what people are saying and how we can make sure they're part of the community.
And Nicole, for cheerleading, where are you getting most of your insights from? Is it from listening to your performers on social media? Is it from, where's it coming from?
So it's a combination. So we train 330,000 cheerleaders at summer camps all across the country. And we spend 4 days with them. We, you know, we're face to face in a lot of different venues. So we gather a lot of feedback from there. Then also, that's our social media is our main way to communicate with the athletes themselves. And so we're kind of always listening. And then we do some focus groups and have a group of influencers that are particularly influential in the cheerleading space that we also, you know, bounce some ideas off of, have them kind of co-create some programs and give us feedback on the latest products and events that we have.
How influential are your coaches and the parents of the...
So the coaches are actually the ones that make the decision where they'll attend camp or where they'll go to competition or where they'll buy a uniform. So most of our relationship from a marketing perspective is direct with that decision maker, the coach. But the kids are really influential too, as well as their parents. So, you know, the parents are the ones paying the money. The kids are the ones that are really passionate about participating. So we have to find different ways to communicate with all of them. We do a lot of the communication with the athletes through social media and through the events. And then we do a lot of communication to parents at the events when they're, you know, a captive audience and they're waiting to watch their child perform. We have messaging kind of running through the events to communicate kind of the benefits of cheerleading and what their athlete is getting out of it.
Yeah, and I think that's an important message. You know, it's not just the Gen Z, it's the people who are holding the purse strings.
Who are supporting them, yeah.
Yes. I'm not sure how we're doing for time. We're done. Sorry, that was a mixed. But okay, well, I'm off to put my original Nirvana t-shirt from the 90s on Depop. And thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you to our fantastic panelists for such an insightful discussion, and we'll be back here next week with more from YMS NYC. So press subscribe to make sure you guys don't miss out. YMS 90 London is up next for us in April next year, where you can hear speakers from Microsoft, Nike, eBay, Levi's, and many more. So please check out voxburner.com for more details, and I will see you back here next week with more youth trends from Voxburner.